Dean Rabbit. And I see there's also a submission from Stephen Rabbit. Will they be presented separately or are you going to combine?
Separately, thanks.
Okay. So good afternoon and welcome. We've received and read the original submission. We've also received and read the evidence that you provided beforehand. You don't need to stand up. You don't.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for providing that. You don't need to read any of that material out for us because we've already read it. But you're very welcome to speak to it and highlight key points for us. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much. I'm Dean Ravage and I'm pretty privileged to be the fifth generation family member to be farming on our sheep, beef and dairy property at Glenham. We've got a pretty strong industry association through young farmers and water catchment groups that we've established in the area. We run a 405 hectare property totaling 478 hectares. Got a pretty cool situation of having native bush and a fairly diverse range of topography on our farm. On our home farm, which is 298 hectares, we're in the unique situation that we've got running water in every paddock. And most of our paddocks have also got a large percentage that are over 20 degree in slope, so it's going to create a few issues moving forward. In recent times, we've been quite heavily involved with the establishment of the Three Rivers Catchment Group, based around Wyndham, Matera, Edendale, and we've hosted some field days, or a field day at home. We had 90 people turn up and we looked at the changes that the plan or the proposed plan is going to make to our property and wintering ability and the ability to winter our stock. This was followed up by a second field day which was attended purely from Environment South and staff. We talked about the same things, which was a fantastic opportunity, but at the same time increasingly alarming and concerning about the lack of knowledge expressed by some of their staff who are going to be policing and implementing this possible policy around the different methods of cultivation, just exactly how steep the 20 degree slope was, and how severe some of the rules were going to have an impact on their property. In my hearing statement, I talked about the key points around stock exclusion, winter grazing, cultivation of slopes, air chem use and subsurface drainage. I won't talk about them anymore because they've all been mentioned in my statement.
Yep.
I'd love to be in a position where all our creeks were fenced off and planted out at home. I'd do it tomorrow if I could, but it's simply the financial burden or financial pressures that would put on the property. My calculations is there'd be very little change of $1 million. And I can't see that being creating an economic benefit to do so. So we're just going to chip away, do what we can when we can, and we want to get it done in the next 30 years, which is going to take a lot of work. But I feel that farmers are already making massive efforts to enhance their environment, and sort of reluctant to feel as though we need blanket rules that target perhaps the weakest link, and there's a lot of people out there already doing a lot of good work. I can't help but feel education, engagement and a bit of pressure from neighbours who are already doing the right thing are going to be a better way to engage with people who aren't really towing the line and letting the team down. Because there's already a huge number of farmers out there putting in efforts, making massive gains because they want to, not because they have to. Questions if you...
Okay, good. I'm just writing something down. So you're ready for questions, Lord? We'll start at your end, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to pick up a comment that you made, and that is that I'm just not sure how we would actually address those that did not want to, either voluntary or were able to do a lot of the things we know that work, and some will always be reluctant. And I think the thinking is there's some sort of rule base so you actually can have a conversation that says we need to do better. How would you see that in your thinking? How would you see that framework being put together? Is this plan able to do that in your eyes or not?
It's going to have an effect on some people, but I just feel as though you're going to get better engagement and take up from people if it's not forced upon them. But unfortunately, the way it is, some people are going to have that and force on them to make those changes, but it should be a last resort, not painting everybody the same brush from where it goes.
So I'll just take that further. What I'm picking up is that the rules are simpler and clearer across the sectors, that would be easier for people at the moment. Are they seeing it as being...
Yeah, perhaps not have time frames attached that are quite... maybe move those time frames...
Or simplify some of the
the
rules. So it's clear, that's what I'm saying. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Eric?
Yeah, I'm just trying to reconcile some comments you made in your original submission on Policy 16, which is restricting dairying where it will affect significant regional wetlands or coastal lagoons. And so you oppose that. Can you just expand on that for me? In your original submission? It doesn't say discourage dairying full stop. It caveats it to where the outcome is to impact significant regional wetlands. That's what Policy 16 says in the plan.
So I think it's the next speaker, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, my. Sorry.
It says plan B.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's Dean. Never mind.
There.
It's in here. Indeed.
Oh, yeah, it's talking about the impact on land values.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And potentially people that.
Okay.
Not being able to convert to dairying is going to be extremely difficult for them to do so. That was what I was getting at.
Okay. Thank you.
Edward? Yes. what are APCs?
Average pasture cover.
All right. And in your evidence and paragraph 18, when you're talking about the progressive density program, that's for the whole, all of the farms?
The dairy farm's already got total stock water exclusion, but it's the remaining two properties that are in sheep and beef and dairy support here.
Right. And the 23, you're talking about new minimal tillage methods. In relation to intensive winter grazing, just didn't know if I know. So you're rejecting to the buffer zones and consider that the new minimal tillage method, cultivation methods should allow, would allow or be provide for a smaller buffer zone because of less runoff, less
We're not disturbing the soil to sow the crops, and with best management practices of grazing techniques, and I think soil disturbance and runoff, potential runoff can be reduced if not severely limited with new techniques and technologies.
So do you use that method predominantly?
Yes, everything this year has been direct drilled and precision sown. We graze critical source areas last and everything there.
And getting it back into grass, you do just minimal tillage?
Yeah.
You're not required to cultivate because of pain?
Well, I say minimal tillage, where as little as possible, but it's unavoidable in Southland. Over winter, as much as we try and prevent pugging and do our best to avoid it, weather events make it inevitable sometimes.
So I think I'm looking at your property, your Bedrock Hill Country?
Yes.
Yeah. So it works, that works for you. Minimal tillage method. And you refer to that being a milder climate where you are, is that?
Sorry,
A milder climate you refer to in paragraph 25, is that?
That's where dairy cows graze for the winter. They graze, we send them off farm to a milder climate.
Oh, good. Yep. Thank you.
Mark?
Oh, yes, thank you, Bernard. You've done an overseer budget on your place, that you've included that in your area, is that right?
That's just the nitrogen report that we submit to Fonterra for the dairy farm.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
So it's a standard thing you have to do.
Yeah, that's it.
Right, how do you find that it's doing that? Are you, that's
it's a very simple, very simple exercise, as long as you keep very good, well, everybody does these days anyway, keeps good records of what they apply and when they apply it. So it's a 5-minute exercise, okay. An online form to submit.
You talk about, and you've got some winter grazing on Old Matara for their graphics as
yep.
well. And you say, I can find the exact words there. I believe that grazing our cows in this area has a positive environmental impact as well as improving the animal welfare position. And you did explain that a little bit earlier on. But that's a good focus on the positive environmental outcome. Could you go over that and explain that a bit more?
If we were to graze our cows at home on our soils where they're a lot heavier, deeper, and our rainfall's a lot higher, I feel as though the pugging and the soil damage and the potential for sediment runoff and pea loss into waterways is much more significant than what there's up there where the rainfall's a lot less and they're on a perhaps a slightly stonier soil where they sit on top of the ground a lot more. They eat a lot less because their daily energy requirements for maintenance and keeping warm is a lot less, so therefore less winter crop has got to be put in to feed them. And the utilisation of that winter crop is far superior than what would be down at perhaps southern south and where we farm. And nobody likes seeing cows standing in a paddock, even though you're following best management practice up to their belly in mud. It's not good for the animals, it's not good for anything. So that's how I feel, as though it's a positive. It's more beneficial by shipping my farm, I know, yeah.
So have you considered the nitrogen losses though to the groundwater in that area?
Yeah.
And what, have you got any comment about that any further?
Well, if I was going to have to grow those crops down at home, I'd be probably putting on a lot more nitrogen to make sure that they grew to a level where they could be substantial enough to feed their cows for the winter.
Right, I wasn't really talking about that. I was asking more about the loss of nitrogen to the groundwater in that area. Do you see that as a problem?
Oh yeah, I'm not going to deny that that's not an issue, but at the same time, with grazing up there, surely the soil structure and the amount of organic matter in the soil is improving annually as well, so it's probably, well, I'd like to think it's increasing its ability to prevent a lot of leaching as well.
And do you know of any evidence to support that idea?
No.
All right, that's good. Thanks very much.
Just got a couple of questions from your written evidence, and thanks for providing that. Paragraph 12, you say there are parts of the proposed plan that would make your current operation economically unsustainable. So can you just, which parts of the plan in particular were you thinking about?
Not being able to cultivate certain slopes over 20 degrees.
Yeah.
It's going to sink. I think I've written somewhere else that south and stock carrying capacity is limited by its wintering ability.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can't carry those stock through the winter, it affects their summer production as well.
Yeah.
So if we're limited to what we can crop, it limits what we can finish in the summer.
So it's mainly the cultivation rules that you were concerned
yeah.
about there. Okay. Paragraph 19, we talk about the intensive winter grazing, maximum 50 hectares. I just wanted to check if you understood that that's not a cap, that's just a threshold above which resource consent would be required.
Oh, rightio.
Is that what I see?
Yeah, no, I was aware there's a consent required after that, but I just feel as though if you've got a 600 hectare property, I mean, going over that, is there any difference between a 50 hectare property where I could crop the whole lot and not need consent, whereas if we've got 600 hectares and require to crop 60 hectares, then need consent. Just doesn't seem really fair or relevant.
So is your primary concern with the need to get a consent, is it?
Oh, no, not to get a consent, it's just the fact that I could have 50 hectares and crop the whole lot, and I could have 2,000 hectares and what, crop 55 hectares, and I'd have to get a consent.
Okay. So you're not worried so much about the need to get a consent, potentially just worried about the fairness of the proposal?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. And just one last question on your paragraph 23 in your evidence, so it's over the page 4. You say there, with new minimum tillage cultivation methods and DPO grazing methods, you don't think the buffers need to be as large as the officers have recommended. So my question is, how large do you think they need to be in those circumstances?
I think each buffer zone is going to be different, and I think every farmer already knows where the potential runoff and potential loss is going to come from. And they're pretty good. We're pretty good judges of where those buffers need to be ourselves. And sometimes cultivating within 2 or 3 metres of a stream is unavoidable, as you just, it's the only way to get through a paddock or around the paddock or the lighter land, and feels like some of those buffer zones can be a bit restrictive as well. To be able to cultivate a paddock properly or do something properly is just unavoidable.
I guess I maybe should have asked you a different question. If we're to retain the rules as they've been notified and or recommended to us, there will be a metre figure associated with the buffer zones. So what I was really interested in is if you think that if minimum tillage is used, there can be a smaller buffer zone than if mechanical cultivation is used, and if so, how small? So would your answer, so you just said yeah, and is your answer to the second question 2 or 3 metres?
3 metres.
2 or 3, he didn't hear, was it 2 or 3?
3.
3 metres. Okay, thanks very much for clarifying that, that's been great. So now, Stephen Rabbit.